This week on It's So Bad, we're hopefully not going to die of dysentery as we talk about Oregon Trail and add it to the endless list. Welcome, Chris.
Michael, hello.
Steve.
Hello, hello.
This week we're talking about the Oregon Trail, the edutainment video game. You could subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, etc., wherever you get your podcasts from. We are adding the Oregon Trail to our endless list, which is our list of currently 89 games. This is our 90th entry onto the endless list. Last week we added X-Men as number 78 on our list. This list is of every video game. We're adding every video game that we can think of to our list. Every week we add a new game. Well, most weeks we add a new game. And we judge it by the quality of the game, its legacy, its history, if it holds up. We try to meet the music of the game, the graphics of the game, everything we include in our discussion of the game. We didn't even discuss the music of X-Men last week, by the way, which was also pretty miserable. Bad use of the Sega Genesis sound chip to bring it back to X-Men for a second.
Slipping in those
very,
late
very
X-Men
crunchy,
takes.
Yeah. Bonus content for the last episode.
But
Matt's not here, so you're just taking your shots.
Yeah.
This week we are adding Oregon Trail. Steve, this is your pick. So why'd you pick Oregon Trail this week?
This is my pick. I mean, this is kind of Chris's pick because you mentioned it a while ago when we started doing these like legacy classic games. I think we did Space Invaders, and you said something like, we need to do Oregon Trail at some point, and that you incepted my brain when you said that. So here we are. But yeah, this is a game like growing up, like I have very fond memories of like third grade, fourth grade, second grade, whenever like we'd have indoor recess and like running over to some old like 1990 computer and firing it up and like five kids standing around just seeing if we can make it to Oregon or if we'd all die a grisly death of cholera or drowning or dysentery or what have you. So yeah, and you know, educational game too. So the teachers are all good with that.
Yeah, so this is our first edutainment game on the endless list. This is our first one. It's basically like a resource management simulation, in a historical vein. So it's meant to teach children about the realities of 19th century pioneer life. So we've all played this. We all grew up as Oregon Trail kids. There's actually
that's our generation.
Like a gap in between Gen X and millennials that they call the Oregon Trail generation.
People
refer to that as that.
Is this a real thing, or are you making this up?
No, no, it's like sociologists will call it that. The people that are in between Gen X and millennial.
I mean, that's
and I'm kind of like
big,
on the borderline.
That's going to be a big factor when we rank this game, because I don't know how many of the games get attributed to an entire generation, so. We'll keep that in mind.
I think we have to put it at number one now. I mean, no other game has a generation named after it.
But yeah, so I played this, I remember, like in elementary school, but also in middle school, we played, we had like Apple computers. I forget what the Apple was at the time, but they had the version that had the hunting with the mouse and the scope.
Yeah.
Is that the later version of this one? Like the 1997 or something? Like third edition? That's one I played a ton of also.
Yeah.
Like my home my home Mac.
So, yes, this was made by three gentlemen originally who were Minneapolis student teachers in 1971. 1971 this game was made. That's how early this game was. 71 is way early for video games, so everybody knows.
It's a long time ago.
This was originally a game that you would play on a teletype. Do you guys know what a teletype is?
I don't.
So a teletype is how you communicate with a mainframe computer before personal computers existed. So it was essentially a typewriter with a spool on it, like a paper spool, and you typed in and it would connect via a modem. The modem, how it worked was you put a phone receiver into a cradle, and it would pick up the noises that the computer made, as opposed to hooking a modem directly up.
Yeah, I saw this. Like,
there was no monitor
or something. Like.
Yeah, yeah. there was no video monitor. It was all just printed out on a spool of paper. So you would type in like you would in the game version that we played. You'd have a menu of options, and you type in like 3 for buy supplies, and then it would talk to the computer, and which was at a different location, and then it would give you a reply like a couple seconds later.
So
and it would print it out.
So from a technology standpoint, this isn't that different from actually just hopping in a wagon and making the trek to Oregon. It's like pretty old school.
Yes, very old school. And it, so the three guys were Bill Heineman, Paul Dillenberger, and Don Roschwitz. I think that's how you say it. They made it in 1971. They were, I forget what college they were at, but they were all coming from the same college. And they all, two were math majors, one was a history major, but they all wanted to be teachers. So they had this program where they would sit in on classrooms as student teachers, and they would like do some of the curriculum and learn, like figure out if they actually wanted to be teachers. And so when they were there, part of the curriculum is Don Roschwitz, he came up with the idea of creating a board game that was showing you how pioneers went across the Oregon Trail. And he had like a number of dice rolls in there. And to make it easier, instead of doing like a million dice rolls and, on the probability, his roommates at the time when they were in Minneapolis, who were also student teachers, were like, why don't we just make a computer game? Because they were learning programming in school. And there were no software programs then. Everybody just went to school to learn how to program. No one actually used computers for anything else, which is like a really weird paradigm because there was nothing to do except for program. Because nothing existed at the time. So they tried to make this game, and they were very successful at doing it. And this was actually pre even Dungeons and Dragons and rolling dice for like a fantasy like adventure type thing. Hmm. This was them just coming up with like a board game idea and transferring that board game into a computer game to make it easier for people to understand.
That's crazy. To like put it in pre-D&D context, like, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, right?
That's that's quite so an attribute.
When did D&D about then? Like, I'm curious like, how much this predates it.
It's like mid-70s.
Okay. So a couple of years. Okay.
Yeah. Gary Gygax, is that his name? The guy who made D&D? Yeah. It was originally 1974 was the first edition. So yeah, pre-D&D. These guys, if you look at their pictures from back then, they look like people that could be in Happy Days type era type stuff. Because they were very like buttoned up people from the 60s. They weren't like hippies or anything. But yeah, they made this game in 71. For their school, one of them, the guy who actually created the game and came up with the idea, he went on to get a job at the Minnesota Educational Computing Consortium, which is MECC. MECC was founded in 1973, and it was a Minnesota state initiative that was meant to like introduce new technology to Minnesota schools. And MECC would go on to... From being a state entity, like a state enterprise, they made Number Munchers, Word Munchers, Fraction Munchers. They made all of the Oregon Trail games. They made the Oregon Trail spinoffs. In the early 80s, they became independent because they didn't need money from the state. They were making so much money. So it was a state enterprise that spun off and became super successful.
I think, and when I played Oregon Trail and... it's funny, like, I had a computer class in my elementary school, and Mike, you and I didn't go to the same elementary school, but our typing class in middle school had old school typewriters. But hey, whatever. Yes. In elementary school, we had IBMs at my elementary school.
I think we had Apple IIs, I believe, in my elementary school.
Yeah, so we played it on old IBMs, but we also played Fraction Munchers. All of the munching games you just named, we played those as well in our computer class in elementary school.
Yeah, I think we had the old IBMs in my school as well, too. And I remember playing those muncher games. Wow.
If you look at the logo for MECC, it's like instant nostalgia. It's like straight up.
Well, yeah, you're blowing my mind. I always assumed that like that stood for like Macintosh or something when I was a kid.
Yeah,
like the MECC.
Yeah.
For it to also be like Minnesota, like, wow.
Yeah, so it's their logo had a rainbow similar to Apple. So that's why it's similar. It feels similar. But yeah, so Don Roschwitz, he went to MECC. He literally printed out the code on a piece of paper, and he brought the code with him to MECC to make this game. So
that is some 1971 stuff right there.
Right? So he made the game in 85. It was remade by MECC. They like made a graphical version because before the original version was all text. And then they added the ox cart graphic and the hunting was added in 1985. And in 1995, they remade it again for more modern times to have additional images and stuff like that. The 85 version was the first version that introduced the moving while hunting. Before that, you had to, if you wanted to hunt, it would say type bang. And if you type bang quick, then you got a lot of meat. If you misspelled bang, you didn't get any meat. If you typed it slow, then you got less meat.
The hunting in these games was like my first taste of like shooters in video games too. Like, I think this is probably what planted that seed. It was my
especially
favorite part
the Mac, especially like, the Mac one with the you aiming with the mouse, especially that one. You get the squirrels whipping across the screen, and yeah, it's great.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's pretty wild too. The probability that it's based on probabilities. So the way it works is you move a little bit each day, and how you move is dependent upon your pace that you set. So you can set a strenuous pace, a normal pace, or like a less pace. So that's how. And you want to move. I think it's like 2,000 miles. You have to move 2,170 miles that you have to move from Independence, Missouri, to Oregon City. So you set the pace, and then you set how much food your people eat. There's three different levels that they can eat. And then depending on that, there's probabilities associated with if your ox is going to get injured or if your people are going to get sick. And then there's also like random probabilities assigned for if raiders are going to come and raid you, which happens in the original version.
Oh yeah. Or if like your wheel breaks or your axle breaks or something like that.
Yeah. Fire in your wagon.
And the probabilities change based upon where you are on the map. So you hit the Rockies at some point, and the Rockies makes there's a higher probability that your axle's going to break. And raiders are going to attack you only close to Independence, because the further you get away, there aren't going to be raiders, because there's nobody out in the frontier. So, like, they factored all of this in the original game. And there's even like weather considerations too. So like you pick what time of the year you want to set out. So it's either June or March, April, May, June, etc. And there's different weather events that can happen depending upon the time that you are. And there's different probabilities associated with that. So it's all very, I was watching in 2017, Don Roschwitz, he did a GDC talk on the history of the Oregon Trail and how it developed and et cetera. And he has an engineer's diagram going through all the different actions that the computer has to check, which is like you start off with check supplies, and then you go down to what is the weather, and then you go down to are the oxes going to get injured, then you go down to are there going to be raiders, and it's like this flow chart of all of the different things that can happen. And like this was something they did back in the early 70s, which is crazy. They would come up with all this.
I'm starting to see the blueprint for like Red Dead Redemption 2 coming out of this game right now. Like this immersive frontier sim where it's like, oh, you're in the Rockies, so you have a higher probability, or I guess less probability, of the Raiders coming now, you know? It's American frontier sim.
You know, it's funny too for like, I think this is like, this game is very much an American thing. Like, I don't think like people in Europe or Australia or anywhere like that would ever play this game, because it's like something we grew up with in our schools. I was thinking about it today. I'm like, why is it the Oregon Trail? Why are they going to Oregon? And it didn't dawn on me that Mexico owned California until 1848. So why would they go anywhere else? Oregon was where they were going if they wanted to.
I never realized that.
Still teaching you stuff. Oregon Trail is still teaching you stuff in 2020.
What a good game.
So that's So yeah, so the history of the Oregon Trail is that I think Jefferson assigned Lewis and Clark to go on lay a foundation for a trail to the West Coast, and they went from Missouri to Oregon. And that was because the United States didn't own that part of the country yet, but they wanted to map it out. And then over the course of the next 50 years, the Louisiana Purchase happened, and then we expanded even further west in Oregon and Washington and all that. But yeah, it wasn't until 1848 that we annexed, I forget what's it called. It's like Nuevo Mexico or something like that, which is California, Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, etc. 1848. So
I
yeah,
learning so much history here right now. Even with, I have wondered about that before. Like the Oregon Trail, like has such a place in my like school memory, and I wonder if it would if it wasn't for this game. Because it was mentioned in textbooks, but like it's not like, you know, a major part of American history. It's part of American history, but right. Yeah, like I remember doing like a project in like third grade where like we had to like create like some sort of like journal from like American history, and I remember like I soaked like pages in like tea to give them like an old parchment. And I did like I wrote an Oregon Trail adventure in like third grade for a class project. Like I still remember that.
I definitely burned corners of papers to make it look old.
Oh
as well.
Yeah. Well, there was a part in my story where our wagon caught on fire. So you see, that's why this historical document has the singed edges. Nice.
Oh, wow. I was always wondering in history when we were going to get to the part where Carmen Sandiego became like a master thief, but it never really came up in our textbook. But
that's strange, huh? That seems like I don't know. That's those Texas textbooks, you know, leaving things out.
But yeah, so the Oregon Trail was popular until the Transcontinental Railroad happened, which was 1869. So after that happened, then the Oregon Trail kind of fell into disfavor. No one used it because they just took the railroad. Or, you know, they got on that. But yeah, so this is the game. You have to we haven't even talked about the game. So the game is you pick if you're a banker, a carpenter, a farmer, or that, and that's it. And I think they added additional roles in the 1996 version. But the role that you pick determines how much money you start with. The banker obviously has more money. But I didn't realize this. The carpenter can repair things easier.
That makes sense.
They should do like an updated 2020 version where they keep all the older roles, but then you're also like a podcaster from New England and you have no money. That'd be great.
Too real. It's too real, man. Living history there.
So you pick your role and then you have to type in the names of your people that you're traveling with. I think you're traveling with four other people for five people total. And then you have to choose what time of year you want to leave. So you can choose from March through, I think, like July is when you can choose. And then you have to manage your supplies, which is the biggest aspect of this game. And the supplies are things like ox, your number of pieces of clothing, wheels, axles, tongues, I think.
Yeah, that's on there.
And then food and bullets, etc. And then you have to either buy supplies or trade with people. And whenever I tried to trade people, they always were assholes and tried to give me, like, they wanted an ox for a pair of clothing. And I'd be like, fuck you. I want to give you fucking ox for a pair of clothing. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, they always wanted, like, the most valuable thing that I was, like, already running out of. Like, I have, like, 200 food. And they're like, oh, yeah, for 150 food, I'll give you this pair of pants or, like, one pair of clothing.
And we mentioned this is a resource management game. So after you get supplies, you can get more supplies along the way, depending upon where you are. You get to forts that will sell you supplies, or you can hunt for food if you want to. And then it sets up like a mini game. And it's one of the earliest examples of a mini game within a game. The hunting aspect of this, of the 1986 or 85 version.
The third-person shooter aspect of this game.
Right. So you're a guy, and it's hard to move around, and you have to shoot things, and it's difficult. And it got a lot easier when they just made the pointer into things. But yeah, so depending on how much you shoot, you get meat. If you in the 86 version, you can only get up to 100 pounds. In the 96 version, you can get up to 200 pounds as long as you have two people alive. So you get more food, and you keep going on your way. Random events can happen, so your party can get sick. Your oxen can get hurt. Thieves can come and steal your shit, which happened to me in my playthrough of this most recently, like 8 times. I had thieves come and get my shit. Did thieves ever come to you guys?
Oh, yeah.
They always stole my clothes. They always wanted my clothes.
They stole my clothes. They kicked me when I was down. We had just attempted to caulk and float across a river and took heavy casualties. We lost Matsy and Chris in that moment, I think. And it was just me alive on my trek to Oregon. And then all of a sudden I got robbed like 4 times in a row right after the river crossing.
Yeah, so the river crossings are kind of like the big make or break moment. And they give you information on how wide the river is and how deep it is. And from that, you're supposed to infer what you're supposed to do. So you can either ford the river, which means just try to walk across it with the ox. Or you can caulk the wagon, which is making the wagon into something that floats and floating it across the river. Or you can use a ferry, or later on, when there's no ferries, you can get an Indian to help you, an Indian guide. So I never tried to ford the river when I most recently played. I either took the ferry first off, or I caulked the wagon, and I got across every time.
I tried to ford the very first river because I was like, it's the first one, and it was 4 feet deep. So I was like, we'll make it. I like pictured how 4 feet deep is, and I was like, all right, you're like in like a kiddie pool, basically, like in the shallow end. You'll be fine. Nope, took casualties, lost new man.
Did Mike drown in that? Oh, well,
and,
you know.
No, Mike died of cholera later. That's what happened.
Sweet.
I always had
friends
breaking their legs. I always had like I won't say his government last name, but I played this game. I put my friend Corey as one of them, and he always was like breaking his leg and like getting lost. It was very true to life.
It's unfortunate.
It is pretty crazy how stark like this game gets when it's like a kid educational game with like death. It's just very casual. Like, oh yeah. You just randomly lost 2 people because you tried to ford the river like an idiot. And it's like, oh my god, those were my family members.
Mike, when you mentioned the minigame thing earlier, at the very end of the game, you can opt to, you kind of have like that action sequence going down the river, trying to dodge the boulders on the way down. Do you know when that came into this game? I don't think that was like was that in the earliest graphical versions, or did that come later?
So that's where I got to that part when I was playing this most recently, and that is in there, and that's why everybody died when I played it the most recent time. It's because I couldn't. You have to use the arrows to go through the river, and I couldn't figure out the controls. It was just up and down. I thought it was left and right also, but it was just up and down, and it also was, there was like momentum that like carried you, and you had to like slowly stop yourself. So I hit 4 rocks. And each time I hit a rock, somebody died, and I was the only one left at the end of it. And I also missed. You have to get on the. You have to hit the landing at the end too, and I missed the landing.
Oh yes, that's right. That's so hard. Hit that landing at the end.
And so all except for one ox died, and everybody died, except for me.
So successful river crossing is what you're saying.
Yes, yes. So at the very end of the game, I don't think we've talked about this, but there's a split, and you can either go further, it takes a longer time, or you can guide yourself down the river. And yeah, that was in the 86 version of this game, the river crossing thing, mini game. So yeah, it's the version I played when I played this most recently.
Yeah, it's such an interesting game, because it's like, I found myself every time I got to Oregon, chances are either my entire party was dead or it was like just like one or two other people. And I always go, was it worth it coming out here? And I would like really ponder that question in my head as I didn't feel like accomplished that I beat the game. I go, was it worth it to stop being a banker in Boston to come out here and essentially kill off my family along the way?
Yeah, you're like Thanos at the end. It's like, what did it cost? Everything.
That's the point of the game, right? It's to teach kids that it was really hard to get out to the West Coast. So.
I can't believe I made it to Oregon, because everyone died, and then I had like dysentery or something, and I was not holding up well. But then all of a sudden I like found a bunch of fruit, hit a fort, and then I was in Oregon, and you know, that's all she wrote.
Oh, you know, one thing we didn't talk about is that when you do get to each of the areas, like a new fort or a landmark, which you can get to landmarks like Chimney Rock, which is like a geographical landmark. You can hit a button and see a portrait and sick music plays.
Yeah, yeah.
So good.
For, I forget what song it was, but I was like, why is this song playing during this? But there's just like random open source music starts playing, like Happy Birthday at one point, I think.
You see that Purple Mountain Majesty in the background there, and it's like a little flute playing or whatever.
there's like an Indian shaking a hand with a settler, and like there are a bunch of shit. Yeah,
you probably just buried Mike after he got bit by a snake and then drowned. But hey, here's some cool mountains to check
out. That's another thing too, is there's gravestones along the way. When somebody dies, you put down a gravestone as well. So, yeah, I mean, that's this game. I think that it's a fun game to play. I think that no two times that you play it are ever the same either, because like random shit happens to you along the way. So that makes it interesting. I think this is a really good game.
It holds
I think
up. It's an old game. It feels old, but like it plays pretty well, and like I just have so much nostalgia from playing it as a kid, and like. I'm still learning things about American history, even in this podcast. So
think kind of about like a common theme that we've all kind of expressed too. Like, well, we played this game in school. It almost kind of had, I'm not going to say multiplayer, but it had like a social aspect to it, where it was like, if you play this in a classroom, it's like everybody is naming their party members, their friends in class. And it's like, you're all yelling across the room. You're like, hey, Steve, you just got lost with the shit, it's like, it's that weird social, not weird, but I mean like that that very unique sense of like, you could have 20 kids in a room playing this game, bonding over this game together. Here we are talking about it 20 years later. We all had a very similar shared experience. I can't think of like many games that, yeah, you can play Mario Brothers with your friends, but this was like a community, has a community aspect to it that I just think you don't really find in a lot of other games. It's so unique, I think, in that way.
There was a more recent version of this game that we were playing, but I remember in 11th grade in my AP US history class, like end of the year, one of those like bullshit classes right before summer hit, we just had a projector set up, and the teacher was like, all right, we're going to play Oregon Trail here. Like, let's go. And five of us got to be like the team going to Oregon there. And I've like very memorably, it was a version of the game where you could like turn back and go back to landmarks. And we went by Mormon Island, and we were like, yo, we got to go to Mormon Island. Right. So we turned around, all died of dysentery on Mormon Island. And that's just like etched into my brain. 11th grade, everyone died of dysentery on Mormon Island.
That is funny. So just in terms of like, we've talked about the cultural impact, how like everybody played this game. Everybody who went to school played this game at some point. But there's a couple other things to mention. So there was an off-Broadway musical called The Trail to Oregon that came out in 2014 that I watched brief snippets of, which is based on this game.
It's no Hamilton,
No. There's several spinoffs as well. They made the Yukon Trail, which is like the Canadian version of this.
Oh, I did play that. Wow, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, and they made the Amazon Trail as well.
I played that one too. Wow, you're blowing my mind. Accessing some lost memories here.
So another thing that I was reading about, MECC, the company that published this game and originally made it, they made a game called Freedom, which was about a runaway slave during the antebellum period of the South, so like before the Civil War. It was pulled from schools because it used racially offensive stereotype speech, and a group of parents sued them to take it off the market.
Has it been renamed the Lady A game or something like that? Freedom.
I don't. Yeah. No. It's funny. I never heard about that game, but I thought that was interesting. Another thing is that so the three guys who made this game weren't acknowledged as being the creators of this game until 1997. When they had the 25th anniversary of this game, the original game coming out, and then they were like celebrated when that happened, but they never made any money off the game. None of them made
it. I don't know the story to this game, but it being made in 1971, the situation you described, I said, I bet somewhere in this game story, like the creators get hosed financially along the lines.
They made $0 off this game.
Yeah.
I think. So most recently, like within the last couple of years, a couple of them have been invited to speak places and finally acknowledged as being, very highly influential. But yeah, they didn't make any money off of it until very recently. The game was inducted a few years ago into the Video Game Hall of Fame, and that's when it kind of got noteworthy who the creators were. But yeah, I mean, this game sold 65 million copies through its various iterations.
That's a lot.
65 million copies. And it was probably played by many more people because it was in schools primarily, right? Mm-hmm. So that one copy was played like dozens and dozens of times right. by dozens and dozens of different people.
Right.
It's probably the most well-known edutainment game, I would say. And then I would say Carmen Sandiego is probably number two.
That sounds right.
Out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Mavis Beacon's Teaches Typing is probably number three.
Yeah. I think maybe the only way Carmen Sandiego is more famous is because that was probably ported quite a bit outside of America as opposed to Oregon Trail, I would think. But I don't know. Yeah. I'm just going to guess. Yeah. But
and there was a game show as well.
Yeah, I think I've mentioned before.
Saturday morning cartoon and a Netflix reboot as well.
Oh yeah.
I think I've mentioned before. I didn't really play that many games growing up, and it was because my parents like didn't want me to be corrupted by video games. But they were down with the edutainment games. So like this was like my window. Oregon Trail, these types of games were like my window to PC gaming when I was like 5 years old.
Huh.
They've had a big legacy on me.
All right, guys, we've said a lot. We think this is a good game. We know that it's got a very big legacy. Where does this game go on our list?
I think we found our no Super idea. Mario 64 killer. This is it. At Oregon Trail, 1990.
I think this game goes up there.
Yeah, it's just... It's like, I know, so listen, like, it's like a gag. Like, the dying of dysentery thing is a gag in popular culture these days. But, no, I mean, the history and the gameplay, it's legit. It's so legit.
So we have a business simulation on our list, which is Extreme Warfare Revenge. Obviously, this game goes above that at number 49. But I'm trying to figure out where this game goes, and it's really hard. Like, there's not a lot of comparables to this game. I mean, we could talk about games that came out at the same time. Like Dragon Quest came out in 86, which was a big game. I think this game, I don't know if this game goes above that, but that might be a good point. Does this game go above Dragon Quest?
I know. I was trying to think of like other games to put this next to, and like we did Minesweeper somewhat recently, so I was looking at that at 60. But it's just, this is so much better. But we don't have other edutainment style games to kind of level set higher up the list.
But also, I mean, there's not going to be another edutainment game that goes above this. Maybe Carmen Sandiego, but I doubt it.
No, this is it. Yeah. So we're breaking new ground here, basically.
Right. Right. It's, I mean, we had fun with it when we were kids. We had fun with it now.
We had fun with it today.
Yeah, exactly. We're speaking very fondly of it. It had a huge cultural and social impact on kids and learning and just us in our own fabric of like with your schoolmates like playing this game. Like it does a lot of things that a lot of games on this list don't do.
I think it goes above Dragon Quest.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't even... I mean... If you told me you wanted to put this in the top 10, I would go like, yeah, I think that's like a legitimate conversation to have. Just because of, I know someone who's not in this episode doesn't like the legacy argument, but if any game is going to get carried in legacy, this and social impact is just the only problem.
And I enjoy playing this game more than I played Dragon Quest. I enjoyed playing this game more than Mortal Kombat. I didn't enjoy playing this game more than like a Streets of Rage, or I enjoyed Dead Space, Arkham Asylum better when I originally played that. Those games do not have the legacy that this game has. So that's where I'm like at right now when I'm looking at this list.
So we're like breaking through 30 into the high 20s basically and trying to figure out how much more we want to go up. Because, yeah, I don't know. Like, is this better than like a, you know, Dead Space, Dishonored, Castlevania? I don't know. Because I
Dead
do think
Space, that, yes.
I think
it's definitely
that, like,
better than Dead Space. Yes.
your dissent is noted.
Refraction is better than Dead Space. Countries,
yeah, I don't know. Like, I think you can't totally separate the legacy out of Oregon Trail because I think that's a big part of it. But like you said, like I had fun playing it today or yesterday when I was playing it. Like it had like a huge social element to it. It's a good game, so. I'm okay with putting it, like, I don't know, maybe it's not quite as, like, pure fun as a game like Streets of Rage or Arkham Asylum or Dishonored or something like that, but I think it's comparable in that spot. I don't know if we could put it in the top 10. There's an argument to be made there, but I don't know if we want to go down that path.
Yeah, again, I think if we're measuring this like removing the legacy part and just thinking of like the fun, I mean, it's not a game you're going to play every single day and go back to like every single month or every year, anything like that. It's kind of like at the end of the day, when you remove the legacy aspect and our memories of it, it is kind of like a quick pick up and play game that you kind of play for, you know, the giggles of like which of your friends are going to die from dysentery or, you know, drown or whatever, if that's how you get your kicks. So like, you know, to me, I would say TIE Fighter is more fun. Tekken Super Bowl is more fun. Going the Wrong Way, Contra is more fun. No Mercy is more fun. Castlevania is more fun. And I think Arkham Asylum is kind of where I land. Like, Arkham Asylum, like, is a... No, I take it back. I think I would put this above Arkham Asylum just because I think Arkham Asylum is the beginnings of a really good franchise that is still a little rough around the edges and hasn't really... Yep. Completely found its footing yet.
Yep.
But once it hits Castlevania, like, Castlevania is a game that, like, I can go back and play over and over and over again. If I beat it, I can feel like I can try to beat it more efficiently. I'm not going to do that with the Oregon Trail. I'm going to play it, like, once, kind of almost as, like, a novelty. But I'm going to have a really fun time while I play it as a novelty. And I'm going to have a lot of good memories flooding back when I play it as a novelty.
Like, Dishonored is a good game, but it has no legacy, right? It has somewhat of a legacy. It's growing a little bit because they're going to make Deathloop soon.
I didn't play Dishonored, so I skipped that.
Its legacy, is that it's an underrated and not very well-known game for being a very good game. So, yeah, no, it doesn't have Oregon Trail-level legacy. Not even close. Right.
And, I mean, I feel like it's a different type of fun, but it's a similar... I have just as much fun playing Oregon Trail for the 30 minutes to 45 minutes it takes to do a run through as I do playing Dishonored. So I feel like 25 is a good spot, maybe? What do you guys think?
Are you putting it above Dishonored or below?
Yeah, above Dishonored.
Because I was going to make the argument also, like, you had the Dragon Warrior, Dragon Quest, like, that's in 1986. Mortal Kombat, 1992. Streets of Rage, 1991. Like, those are contemporary games, so... I was kind of thinking of putting it there more. I love Dishonored and Batman Arkham Asylum. I don't know that I'd put Oregon Trail above it, but I could be swayed.
So for factoring in legacy, I think that this game has a legacy that those games don't have. I think that those games are much more deeper experiences, obviously. They have much richer stories and universes, etc. So, I mean, you could go back and forth on whether or not you want to put it. I definitely would put it above Dead Space, because I think that it's just a funner game. So it's really, do we want to put it at this point? Because I see Dishonored and Batman Arkham Asylum together. I wouldn't put it necessarily in between. I would put it either above that or below Batman, above Dishonored or below Batman and Arkham Asylum.
So like I said, I never played Dishonored. So if I remove Dishonored from... the three games we're talking about, I would say, I think it's better than Arkham Asylum. I don't think it goes above Castlevania. So it's kind of, I leave it to you guys to kind of figure out where it falls and it's Dishonored.
I personally would put it below Arkham Asylum, but if you want to make a strong case for why it should go above it, I'd hear that.
I would say the one case that I have is that Arkham City, I know, is going to go above Arkham Asylum from what you guys have told.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So you're going to have Batman representation higher on the list. So
I do kind of like the idea of, like, just because of the impact Oregon Trail has, bumping it up a couple of spots, just like to give it that little, hey, Oregon Trail is going pretty high on our list here.
Let's put it at 25 then. Why don't we do that? Hey, I feel like we should put it at 25.
Let's do it. I'm fine. All right. You know what? You talked me into it. Let's do it.
Right. So Oregon Trail, congratulations. You are now the 90th entry on our list. And number 25 on our endless list.
Oh, boy.
I think that's deserving. Let's put that there. And you can find our complete endless list. It's in our podcast description. It's up on our Medium page. If you have a problem with us putting Oregon Trail at number 25, go fuck yourself. No, I'm just kidding. You can email us at our itsobadpod@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter and yell at me, itsobadpod on Twitter. And you can find us there. But yeah, we have a new number 25. That's pretty cool. that we have an edutainment game on our list. We've been adding new genres recently. We added a puzzle game. We have a puzzle game coming next week, like a sort of puzzle game, I guess.
It's a puzzle game. That I picked
for sure.
Okay, not the one that I picked. Oh no, you're right. Right. We have another episode to record.
That's right. That's right. So we're adding another game, puzzle game. So we're adding new genres, and this is our first edutainment game, which is a resource simulation known as Oregon Trail, number 25. But thank you guys for joining us this week on the podcast. Steve, thank you for this pick.
No problem. Happy to do it. Thank you.
And thank you, Chris, for joining us as well.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week with another episode. Thanks, everybody.